Also, golden.com, they always promote our events, and they also treat us awesome, and take great pictures of our gatherings, and we love golden.com. If you haven't signed up for any of their email services, you should do that. Go to golden.com and get an email every day about something amazing happening at Golden. So that's pretty cool. We have for sale, if you should be interested, pint glasses with the Golden Beer Talks logo. I think it's 4 for $20.
And one for $6.
And one for $6. So you can do the math on that. And we're going to get started, as usual, with our beer ambassador, Frank Law. He's going to come up and talk about tonight's brewery and all kinds of other, I'm sure, interesting beer-related information. So here's Frank.
Hello. This month, our future brewery is Holiday Ale, which is up north of town in 801 Brickyard Circle. And they are open. They have a tap room that's open Thursday through Sunday, you know, evening hours pretty much, although afternoons on the weekend. They are a dedicated gluten-free brewery that's the fifth in the country and the first in Colorado. So all they make is gluten-free beer. And on Sunday, they have 7 different beers on tap. They have 2 IPAs, one of them was black, but anyway, 7 different beers on tap that they made and that are all gluten-free. They are currently distributing in 1-pint cans their favorite blonde, that's the name of the beer, blonde ale, and it's right now throughout the Denver metro area, and their reach is expanding. And they have, I believe, thousands of cans still in their back room waiting to be filled. And they're going to start also canning and distributing Pat Randy's IPA, which was the other IPA they had on tap on Sunday. They hope to get that done by Thanksgiving, but certainly by the end of the year. They have their own canning line there, little tiny thing. It's actually quite cute. But it's a dedicated gluten-free canning line. And they're master brewer there, he said, you know, most of the beers that are gluten-free, they brew regular beer and then they put enzymes in to get rid of the gluten. And he said, generally it winds up being a bad beer. And I've only tried one other gluten-free beer, and that was up in Montana when I was there recently. Well, it wasn't very good. So I think Holiday Ale makes really good beer that happens to be gluten-free from my perspective, because I'm not gluten intolerant. They're also intending to have 2 fall beers. They're going to have a pumpkin ale, and they're probably going to have a new red ale that will possibly be called Riley Red. I believe in honor of my horse.
Yeah.
Riley Red.
Yes. Your beer drinking horse.
You've got to do that. They're also supporting the Golden Gallop a week from Sunday. That's a fun run to raise money for schools, for Golden schools. And so they are sponsoring it. So after the run, maybe even before the run, you can have a beer Sunday morning, September 25th. And they're also participating in the Great American Beer Festival in October. And today we've got a Saison and a Black IPA. And you may recall from some of the earlier Golden Beer Talks, talk about black IPAs and are they really a distinctive, different beer? You know, kind of a new invention that was originally created by a couple of breweries getting together in the Northwest and making this black IPA is what they call them. Well, when Holiday Ale was put together, their consultant for putting out the process equipment and everything, he's a big beer fan, not surprisingly. And he was part of the group that defined what a black IPA is. And so he's now part of the definition of black IPAs. His name is Mark. And that's why his black IPA is Dark Mark Black IPA.
Nice.
Mark.
Nice.
So kind of a small world. And back to hops. So Holiday Ale. And then hops. Sunday Denver Post. The United States has now surpassed Germany in acres of hops production. We've got about 53,000 acres in hops,
yeah.
And Germany's got about 45,500 acres.
So there.
Guys from Colorado had about 200 acres in hops, and they feel, according to the Denver Post, that we could have thousands of acres of hops in cultivation in Colorado and still not exceed the demand for beer. Especially Colorado native over at AC Golden. And But then if you remember, craft beers, like we always have with Golden Beer Talks, is generally about 10 times the amount of hops in those beers compared with the mass produced. And with that, next month we've got Jason Hansen coming back and talk about the impact of craft brewing in Colorado. Second Tuesday in October, which will be our third anniversary.
It will be.
And with that, Courtney?
Yep. You probably remember.
Has Frank ever had a beer? Frank doesn't like. I didn't ask him today. Frank, tell me the truth. Because every beer you give me, you're like, this is a really good beer. He says, yes, that's why I just do all this hard work tasting every beer in town so I can bring the best beers for you to drink here at Golden Beer Talks. But there are a few beers that he has come across that he would not recommend. So that's the life of the ambassador. Just tasting and tasting and tasting. Oh, so sad. Thank you, Frank, for your service. We do have a cool website as well, and I wanted to mention it because we put up audio recordings of our talks. If you want to hear one again, or you want to share one with someone who wasn't able to be here, you can always send them a link, and they can listen to it. That's what this whole soundboard situation is all about. So our speaker tonight is multifaceted, and I'm going to try to hit some of the highlights of his qualifications to be here tonight. So he's an electrical engineer. He's a policy leader in our state on renewables and many other issues. Worked with the Colorado Solar Energy Industries Association for work with the legislature as well as the commission for a number of years. He runs a website called Energy Should Be News, where he not only shares information that's really useful, but also makes his own videos that are also useful. And he also, well, the one thing, he's just a major advocate, so he's an activist, and an inspiring one at that. He's so inspiring that his mother loves him very much. Henry Olson.
Thank you very much, Brittany. Does this sound good?
Sound good.
Excellent. And here's the beer. I mean, what a great way to get together and have a good time and to learn a few things too. On our website, we have about 14 videos. We have a total of about 95,000 views on our various videos, which, given that we're not cute or comic or curvaceous, that's pretty good. And today's talk is going to be about 100% renewable energy and moving towards that. Now, last year, the United States hit a milestone. We hit 1 billion solar roofs in the United States. It took us 40 years to get to 1 million solar roofs. The estimate is that in the next 2, we'll get to our second million.
Yeah.
This is phenomenal growth. And we have several people that are involved in the solar industry. I'd like them to raise their hands, because really, these are the people that are the heroes that are associated with this. It's the companies that actually make solar happen. So this talk is about why we are moving very quickly towards a renewable energy future. An energy future where I want to see everybody on the planet have our energy lifestyle, but that it's done in a way that's sustainable. That we can keep doing this literally for as long as the sun shines and the wind blows. That's my goal. And the thing that's really great that we couldn't talk about before is that now it's all about the money. It's gotten cheap. The cheapest form of new electricity in the world is renewable solar and wind, both of those. That happened. How many people here installed solar panels, have them on their roof? How many people who had talked to a solar installer or done community solar? That's a way that you don't have to have full panels on your roof. You can share in a community garden. All of you, you're heroes, okay? The reason that the solar panels are cheap is because you made them cheap, because you guys installed them.
But you're a hero.
Okay, now, I've got a question for you. Can anybody come up with an example? I haven't been able to. Can anybody come up with an example of things that we mass produce that don't go down in price as we mass produce more of them? Can you make a couple things example? Okay, if you do, please email me. In fact, I'm going to pass out two things here. One is an email list. You can sign up for my monthly email newsletter. Couple of pages. I read about 50 or 60 articles, and you can.
Children is the answer, Ken.
Children. I'll keep that in mind. I have to say, except for children. Okay. So this is the reason: is that mass production works. That's the reason that the panels are achieved, and that's why the wind turbines are achieved. If we talk about one coal-fired power plant, a large one, it makes about the same amount of electricity in a year as 425 wind turbines, and that makes about the same amount of electricity over the year as 13 million solar panels. The coal-fired power plant, okay, that's like copying the Bible by hand. The wind turbines, that's like using a Gutenberg printing press, one page at a time. And solar panels, that's like high-speed digital press. That's the reason the prices are coming down, and they continue to come down. Now, I'm sure that all of you are energy geeks, well, maybe not all of you, but most of you are energy geeks, and you wait with bated breath for two studies that come out at the end of August. In fact, they came out a week and a half ago. Okay, they're from the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory, and they talk about what the average price for wind farms and solar farms is. This is the best study. Well, this study is wonderful. It has all kinds of things in it. But if you're trying to understand what the real price of renewables is, this is the place to get it. That's the place where you can get this information. The basic answer, I'll pass this around in just a minute. This is what the cover of the solar study looks like. The basic answer is that wind, in the United States, the average contract price for a wind farm electricity was 2 cents a kilowatt hour. To put that in perspective, probably the average generation cost for Xcel is 6 cents, 2 cents. And for solar, it was 4 cents, okay? 2 cents and 4 cents. This drop, this is an amazing drop in price from 2014, that's 2015, just last year. In 2014, it was 2.4 for wind, down to 2.0, and for solar, it was 5 cents down to 4 cents. Do you know anything that's fallen that fast in price? I don't know. This is phenomenal. But this is why. It's all about the money. This is why renewables are taking off everywhere. There's more to this story. Something like 60 to 70% of these contracts, of these wind farms and solar farms, are what are called fixed price contracts. If it's 2 cents in year one, it's 2 cents in year 20. What this means, no inflation adder, literally 2 cents. That means that it's declining rate. The cost goes down as inflation goes up. This is astonishing. I mean, there isn't anything that you can buy that's lowest cost and that's declining rate over time. That's just amazing. And those prices, that includes everything. That's the capital equipment, that's the maintenance, that's operations, that's profit for companies that are doing it. If these companies, most of these are done under contract, where the company that owns a wind farm, if they don't make the electricity, they don't get paid. That's a lot different than what we're used to when we get electricity. For example, when Xcel buys a power plant, if they don't run it, if it doesn't work, we still pay for it, and we pay for their profit. A whole lot different thing. Okay, I'm going to switch gears here for a second. I'm going to jump around a little bit in this talk. It isn't a smooth, this follows this. There's some other issues we want to talk about. And then I get to pass this around, too. This backside has a picture from the air of the city of Boulder. Nobody can see this in this room. That's why I'm going to pass it around. Basically, it's every roof. They looked at the roofs and they said, the question was, how much solar can you put on all of Boulder, just the good sunny rooftops? Not the rest of the roofs, just the good sunny ones. How much? The way they did this was with LIDAR data. Now, LIDAR is like radar, except it uses laser beams. You run an airplane over town, and it's very, very precise. It can tell if your roof is an angle like this, or an angle like this, or an angle like that. It can see the trees, so it actually sees the shading. You take that with a bunch of NREL magic calculations, and you can actually figure out that, in fact, that the city of Boulder can do 550 megawatts of solar, on good solar, high yield, on the rooftops in the city of Boulder. That's about 55% of our electricity. That doesn't include the parking lots. That doesn't include the buffer zones around freeways and highways. We don't have to go out into the deserts. We don't have to go out into the eastern plains for solar. Let's just put it on our roofs. I think that's something we can all applaud.
Yeah.
Okay, now my reward for giving this talk, usually I take a beer, but I saw the display case there. And they have some really great looking cakes. Now I gotta tell you, my daughter, and this is a challenge for the kitchen, okay? My daughter makes really great cakes, and really great cakes. They're quite amazing. Like most bakers, she follows a recipe to do that. The recipe for 100% renewable energy. First is one part renewable electricity, 100% or darn close. You know, I say 100%, really 95% would be fine, really 90% would be fine. That's the first part. It's not just renewable electricity though, it's energy. It's all the ways that we use our energy. The second big way that we use energy after electricity is transportation. We're going to electrify that. We make the electricity renewably, then our transportation going with electricity, that works. How many people have tested in an electric vehicle? How many people own one? Okay? They're fabulous. If you haven't tested anyone, go test drive a Leaf. Basic electric vehicle coming down in price, going up in range. They aren't the vehicle yet to take you to Santa Fe, not the Leaf. If you, how many people have tested in or own a Tesla?
Test.
Not too many.
Just
test. A friend of mine let me drive theirs. They were very brave, I thought. Fabulous car. And yeah, you can drive all around the country, all across the country. It has enough range. Charging is fast enough. There are enough charging stations for that. Not every single place that you want to go, but most places that you want to go, you can go and test the Model S. The range is there. The charge rate is fast enough. Fabulous stuff. The third thing that we need for our cake recipe, for renewable cake, is comfort. Comfort. Keeping our buildings warm, us comfortable, and heating our showers. That's mostly natural gas. And we're going to electrify that as well, and the technologies for that. If you have any questions, I understand there's a nice long question and answer period where I get to get into any details that you all want to get into that I didn't get a chance to cover. But the key issues are renewable electricity, electrifying transportation, electrifying comfort. Yeah. Don't know what a tipping point is? Yeah. Okay. I think 2015, we're going to look back in a couple of years. You don't know when a tipping point happens, the year it happens. You've got to wait a couple of years. I think in a couple of years, we're going to look back at 2015 as the year that renewables tipped. Here's a couple of quickies. Why? In 2015, for the very first time, the developing world installed more solar, invested more in renewables than the developed world. The people that don't have the money installed more renewables than the people who did, for the very first time. In 2015, for the very first time in the United States, clean energy jobs, there were more clean energy jobs than there were in coal extraction or in oil extraction.
Yeah.
That's amazing. We already know about it's all about the money, right? The 2 cents and 4 cents. That's astonishing. It's the cheapest form of new electricity. Period. Hands down. No question about that. In 2015, there are plans for 2 nuclear power plants that don't need to close. Their license isn't expiring. It isn't over. Their likely plants aren't over. Because, in the case of the one in Omaha, quote, there are cheaper sources of zero carbon electricity. cheaper than old, already running nuclear power plants. The other one is the last remaining coal nuclear power plant in California, Diablo Valley. It's going to close in about 4 or 5 years is the plan because of competition from renewables. What a beautiful world. And then there's one more, and it's Georgetown, Texas. Because you see, Georgetown, Texas is 100% renewable electricity right now. They went in 2015. Now, you got to know a couple things about Georgetown, Texas. First, it's not like other places that say they're 100% renewables, like Palo Alto and Aspen and Marin County. Those are really progressive places. And I'll tell you what about Georgetown, Texas. Nice place, Rockbed Conservative. It was all about the money, seriously. Okay. They went about 5 years ago. They said our traditional contracts for electricity, coal and natural gas, are about to expire in 2015. In fact, and we're going to decide what it is we're going to replace them. If you want more coal and natural gas, and they said, you know, that wind stuff, that wind energy, that's really cheap. But you know, the wind doesn't blow all the time. And then they said, gosh, you know what? If we take and it doesn't blow all the time, but you know, there's a lot of the time of the year where it does blow all the time in Texas, and then there's a lot more hours of the year where it blows halfway. Well, how can we handle that? Well, what if we put in, say, more wind turbines than we need? Maybe we put in twice as many wind turbines as we think we need. Then when the wind's only blowing halfway, we still have enough electricity. And they said, it's still cheap. And they said, and there's still a bunch of hours. In fact, those hours, they tend to be in the middle of the day. In fact, it's worse in the summertime when the wind isn't blowing very much in Texas. And they said in the middle of the day, in the summertime, well, you know, that solar stuff, it's getting pretty cheap. In fact, it's actually pretty darn cheap when it comes down to it. And they said, wow, we can put in some wind and some solar, and we can keep the lights on a whole lot more hours. And even with the sun, sometimes it's not full blast. And so let's put in twice as many solar panels, and we're still cheap. But we're going to end up with an awful lot of excess electricity. In fact, we're going to have double the electricity that we need. What are we going to do with it? And they said, you know what, we live in Texas. And in Texas, there's an open market on electricity. Mm-hmm. We can sell our excess to other people. In fact, when they did the analysis, they're going to be selling electricity for thousands of hours a year. They're going to need to buy electricity for a few hours, a couple hundred hours a year. Even if they're selling 1,000 hours a year cheaply, you can buy extensively for a couple hundred. This is going to work. Now, you and I, we pay about 13 cents a kilowatt hour for our electricity for our homes. In Georgetown, Texas, they spend 9 cents a kilowatt hour, and they think they're going to be able to hold that cost at 9 cents, not adjusting for inflation, at 9 cents for the next 20 years. Remember, these were all fixed price contracts, declining real dollars. That's astonishing. That's amazing. That's a part of the tipping point. So you have actual examples not doing it for the environmental need. How do we have time?
You're doing good.
Okay, I've got about 10 minutes left.
Five minutes.
Okay, cool. Well, I better get rolling here, huh?
We can give you some leeway.
Okay. The other thing that's neat about Georgetown, Texas, the reason I use it as an example, is because the way that we're going to fix variability, they've already done two of the things that we're going to do as we look to reduce the variability. Variability. The sun doesn't shine all the time. The wind doesn't blow all the time. Right? We all knew that. That came as a big surprise to electric utilities that the sun didn't shine all the time. At least the way they were acting. Does anybody work for a big electric utility? Oh, thank you very much for your service to all of us on this. I don't know if you work for Xcel or exactly who you work for, yeah. Xcel does some things good and some things not so good. And we're going to have to see. I suspect there's interesting conversations going on in Xcel all the time with regard to this. I'd love to be offline on the wall. So I'm sorry for picking on you, but it's an easy place to pick on, and some of it's richly deserved. I'm still smiling at you. A little bit. Particularly during the solar industry. Okay, so how are we going to handle variability? Five different ways. We're going to build too many of them. okay? And we're going to sell the excess cheap. We're going to mix up solar and wind because they are complementary to each other. And additionally, we're going to put in other kinds of resources. Where we got it. Where there's good geothermal, we'll do it. Where there's good tidal, we'll do that. The next thing we're going to do is battery storage. Remember I said that it's millions and millions of solar panels that are making solar panels cheap. It's not going to be millions with an M, it's going to be billions with a B for electric vehicles, for batteries. That's driving the price down very rapidly. And we're just at the start of a big drop in price on batteries. It's going to be battery storage. That's one of the things that we're going to do to reduce variability. The next thing that we're going to do is we're going to spread them out over the map. Here's my wind farm. Here's my wind farm in Wyoming. Moving away from Michael. Doesn't work. Okay, here's my wind farm in Wyoming. Here's my wind farm in Colorado. I actually have studies that show this. When the wind is blowing in Wyoming, there's a good chance it's not blowing in Colorado. And when the wind farm, when the wind is blowing in Colorado, there's a real good chance that it's not blowing in Wyoming. If we connect the two with the big red transmission wire, I know they're not red in real life, but just so that you can see the example here, that's one of the ways that we're going to manage variability. There's a lot more chance that the wind is going to be blowing the larger the area that we connect up. All of this information, I have studies and support and references for. So if you have any questions about that, as I say, I'll pass around my business card, and I will pass around, well, let me do this now. This is the sign up for energyshouldbe.org, my monthly newsletter. My monthly newsletter, please write neatly. It's really hard to decipher sometimes. Print neatly your email address in particular. And then these are my business cards. Feel free to email me if you have any questions, you have any concerns, you have any thoughts about how to make the talk better. If you excel and you want to complain back to me, by all means. Okay, so we're talking about variability. We're going to spread them out over the map. And then the final thing is we're going to encourage use when the sun is shining and the wind is blowing. Well, how are we going to do that? Let me give you an example. When I fill up my electric car with electrons, I pay what amounts to about $1 a gallon equivalent. In other words, if I was to buy a gallon of gasoline, it would cost me $1 if I was in a gasoline car. I'm not, an electric car. That's at my normal residential rate, about $1 a gallon. It's pretty cheap. When the sun blows, when the wind blows and the sun shines, let's fill it up at, say, 30 cents a gallon. Will that encourage people to use it? More electricity at those times when we have excess? Absolutely. And in fact, Xcel Energy, to complement Xcel, they've actually done studies that look into this, how they might do, what it takes to do electric vehicle charging with that. Okay, so what's standing in our way in terms of moving very rapidly? And the answer is, it's the monopoly electric companies and their regulators, and state laws, all of those. It's not just the monopoly electric companies, but it's the way the rules are set. It discourages innovation. In fact, frankly, electric utilities are the least innovative companies on the planet. They spend about 1% of their money, of their income, on innovation. That puts them at the lowest tier of all companies, the lowest tier in terms of innovation. The second thing is, frankly, you can't do innovation and be a monopoly. It just doesn't work. Competition, that's where innovation comes from. The monopolies exist to punish competition, to make it go away. That's their job. Okay? And to chain it up and to limit it. Ask the solar industry and they will tell you that they're limited not by how many panels they can install, but by what Xcel will let them do, by the rules that Xcel sets. And so it's not just Xcel, and it's the regulators and state law, all of that. Okay, so we need to unleash innovation. That's the place that we need to move forward. Okay? And how are we going to do that? And the answer is, it happened in 2015. Now, I'll tell you that when I first saw this, I didn't really understand what it was. It took me weeks to figure this out. And this is far and away the biggest thing that changed in 2015. Because in 2012, there were almost none of these. 2012, zero. In 2015, one-third of the wind, the utility-scale wind that was built in the United States, went to non-utility companies. Companies that you've heard of before, like Amazon and Apple and Google, the most innovative companies on the planet. Okay? Direct contracts without interference from their monopoly electric utilities. 30% from zero. That's unbelievable. That is an incredible, remarkable change. It's not just the most innovative companies in the high-tech end of things, DuPont and GM. Mars Candies, Steelcase Desk, these all signed contracts for wind or solar in 2015. I'll pass this around because you can't see it. This is the chart of the different companies. You can kind of zoom in and see what's going on with this. And I have this electronically. If you want it, send me an email. I'll be happy to provide that. Okay? Phenomenal, incredible change. Because these companies view innovation as what they do every single day. And when they have low-cost energy, remember I said it was all about the money? They've never seen anything before that is fixed price, declining in real dollars, and low to begin with. You can hedge natural gas. You can get a contract for natural gas. In fact, Excel has done this, because natural gas prices are very low. But you don't get the low price. You've got to pay extra for it. Okay? And you can't get 20 years. Doesn't exist in businesses. Businesses said, this is incredible. We've never seen anything like this before. That's why it's taking off. But it's not equal around the country. In fact, if you look at my map here, you can see there's green stars in a lot of states, 21 of them, have some kind of electricity choice program. Might be choice for my community. My community gets to choose the electricity supplier. Might be choice for a corporation. If you're a Google, that you can choose, and it might be choice for an individual. Might be all three of those. It varies state to state. But one of the things you'll notice right away is that Colorado does not have a green star on it.
Yeah.
Can we have a collective boo for that? Because Texas decided that they wanted a free market in electricity. And so, in fact, Texas has, interestingly, Texas has, of those three choices, the three kinds of choice, they have corporate choice and they have individual choice. They do not have community choice. State law. California has community choice and they have corporate choice, but they do not have individual choice. Personally, I think we want all three. Ohio has all three. New York State, I don't know what the status is. Most of the states have corporate choice. Illinois has community choice, they have corporate choice. I don't know if they have, I don't think they have individual choice on this. I've been looking for a study that showed all these different things, didn't happen. Okay, that's what we need to change. We need to make Colorado a leader, not so much a follower anymore. There's 21 states, more than half of the U.S. population has choice, and Colorado doesn't. This is bad news for a monopoly. Good news for us, we need to change state law. If you are an elected official, if you know an elected official or have somebody that you know somebody that's an influencer, I'd like to talk to them because that's what we're doing, is talking about the legislature. If I was on the other end of that, I'd really like to have the question. So, so that's what we need, is to move to choice. Are we going to do that? I don't know. That's a big, big political question. It's a big political change. Excel is going to oppose it very actively, I suspect. Would you guess? Seems probably likely. If I was a monopoly, I would oppose it. Nice work if you can get it. Here's the bottom line. We can change. We can make very, very rapid change. We need to unleash innovation. And we are seeing innovation happening all over the place, but not so much in Colorado. We need to fix that. Now, how many people here view climate change as something we should be taking more on? Okay? The majority of you. There are some people that say climate change is overblown or I don't believe in it at all. Frankly, it's all about the money. We can support renewables and not be about climate change. Why about climate change? The reason I'm here is because of penguins. I got to visit penguins in Antarctica in 2001. Their homes are going to get wiped out first, well before our homes do. That's not okay with me. We need to fix climate change. We need to do it now. But this is a funny kind of war. Bill McKibben said, climate change is a war where winning slowly is exactly the same thing as losing. Okay, Excel Energy thinks it's a really big deal to get to 35% renewables by 2022. Frankly, that is a big deal for Excel. It's not a big deal for us. That's not okay. We could be at 50 or 60% renewables at lower cost than we are going to pay now. Excel needs to get their act together. We need to see competition. Thank you so much for your time. Thank you for caring.
Yeah.
A beer or a piece of cake or whatever it is, and we'll come back for a few more here shortly. Thank you.
Let's get another hand on the
desk.
Choice and maybe also picking on Excel. How are things going in Boulder with the changeover to
A city-owned electric grid, they're often called munis.
Okay.
So those of you who don't know, about 5 years ago, the city of Boulder started a long process, basically to get out from underneath the thumb of Excel, so that we could do community choice and we provide corporate choice and individual choice, and lots of renewables and stable price. All those things Excel really can't do. And that's a giant legal process. It's not something that has been done on the scale of Boulder in Colorado for at least 50 years and possibly 100 years. Needless to say, Excel is throwing up every single roadblock they possibly can. I like to think that it's moving like a glacier, not a glacier that's melting, but a glacier that actually is moving. It's unstoppable, but the truth is that we really don't know. We probably have another couple of years of the legal process. The city is in the process of putting together an application that is the separation plan. They actually had one originally. The Public Utilities Commission basically said on that plan and said what they wanted. And the city now believes that they have the information and the plan together to provide that to the commission. It will still be at least another year through the commission, then we get to go through condemnation court. This is not for the faint of heart. In the city of Boulder, we have enormous support for this. The last time it went to the ballot, Excel put a fake grassroots campaign. They spent millions of dollars under other people's names to oppose this. In this case, a no vote was to continue municipalization, and we got an unheard of 66% of our population voting to continue municipalization. This is not heard of ever in politics. Those of you that know about politics, you just don't get that. Sky is blue, 60%, you know, we're moving forward. It's a lot slower than we hoped, there seems to be a lot of political support. There is some erosion, but we think that when we get in front of the people, that it's the stories that I'm able to tell. This talk, I couldn't have given this talk 6 months ago, never mind 3 years, 4 years ago, when we last went to the ballot box. This talk is so much better. The situation is so much better. All the analysis that was done with the city was done with 6 cents a kilowatt hour wind, and it's 2 cents now. You can figure out that that's a pretty big savings in terms of what's going on. There isn't much question that we can make this work financially. Reliability-wise, will be better than Excel because we'll vary the lines in a relatively short period of time. In terms of operational, will be far lower cost, and lots and lots and lots of renewables. That's the short story. The longer story is very, very long. If you want me to come back and talk just municipalization, I'd be happy to do that for that. Other questions? Over here. Nice and loud.
Thank you. How was the last one? When you changed over from something that's been in my was a more under my Excel to
okay, so is the question like for the last little bit from 95 to 100% renewables, or is it when you actually make the transition?
To your ops.
Well, if the law allowed it. So in Texas, you actually have a whole long list of companies that you can get to. You get on the web, you choose one, you get to it. I think you have to sign up. Most of them are 1 year minimum.
But you're converting from what like Excel has today to something that is putting the infrastructure.
So you're not talking about for an individual house, you're talking about like the city of Boulder, how long it will take us.
Not how long it will take. the cost of that infrastructure.
Who takes care of the infrastructure?
Your house.
Okay.
That whole thing that used to be owned by itself.
But this is you're asking about the grid.
Yeah.
Okay. So the answer is you still have to pay for the grid, right? You still have to pay for distribution and transmission. In the case of places, like California, we have community choice aggregation. The incumbent monopoly utility continues to run the distribution system. Okay? They might even continue to do the billing, although where the electricity comes from, that's coming by the decision of the community. None of the schemes that people have you not paying for the grid. Okay? You have to pay for the grid. Now, Excel sends out bill stuffers. We all know that everything that's inside the bill stuffer is absolutely free. Okay? But they've actually been sending this out for a long, long time. And what it says is that approximately a third of our bill, whether you're industrial, commercial, or residential, goes to paying for the distribution and the transmission system. We don't see any reason that that won't be the case. In the case of Boulder, where we actually have the numbers, part of what we have to pay for will be paying for buying the distribution system from Xcel, and we'll have to continue to pay for transmission. That's just part of the deal. That's part of what you have to calculate in terms of what it is that you do. And that's all built into the analysis that the city has done. Did I answer your question?
It does.
Okay.
Oh,
there's
sorry.
A question over here.
So, how does a state go from a single utility monopoly to community choice? Like, does it go through the legislature? Is it an amendment in the state? What's the path?
Okay, so the question is, what's the legal path to get to competition if you want to go that way? Okay, I'm not a lawyer, I'm not allowed to interpret Colorado law. I'm allowed to have my opinion on Colorado law, though. Those of you that know me, I've been at the legislature for 5 years as COSIA, the solar installers, the organization that represents the small solar installers, as their legislative consultant on at both the Public Utilities Commission and at the legislation. I've worked on a dozen bills. I've worked on probably maybe 20 different electricity dockets at the Public Utilities Commission on this. I actually have an opinion on this. I believe that there's nothing in the Constitution that says that we can't go to competition. So that would probably put it into the statute of the legislature. Legislature is not allowed to change the Constitution. Only the vote of the people can do that in Colorado. In the legislature, we have to get through a fairly big political obstacle. It's called Xcel, Tri-State, and Black Hills, the three monopoly electric utilities in the area. And that's a big problem. They are politically extremely powerful. They have lots and lots and lots of money. What's different this time is that it's possible that the corporations, particularly the multinational corporations that have places in other places like Google or IBM and that kind of thing, where they are signing contracts directly, may be willing to come to the legislature and talk to the legislators and say, you know, we're more politically powerful than Xcel is. We really want to see choice and competition. In fact, in many of the states where competition is allowed, that's where it started, was with competition at the corporate level and allowing competition for them. So the companies said, we want to do this. Exactly what the legislation looks like, that's a complicated matter. We have 21 states to look at, and that's exactly what we're starting to do. We're asking the National Council of State Legislators, NCSL, to see if we've got legislators now asking them. I was asking them before, I don't count. I now have legislators asking me for the information about what is best practice for putting competition into a state. Let's have this conversation. Will it happen this year? Probably not. You never know. Politics is a very funny thing. Sometimes things can change very fast. One of the things you'll find is I talk about energy freedom and choice and the little flyer that I have has American flags on it. Frankly, this isn't an R or a D issue.
Right.
Choice and freedom to put what you want on the house without Xcel telling you, no, you can't put more solar than you want to because you're planning to get an electric vehicle, okay? Because you have this much room. No, you can't sell to your neighbors your excess electricity. That's not right. And we're seeing that in some very Republican places. Barry Goldwater Jr. supports organization called PUSC in Arizona, called Tell Utilities Solar Won't Be Killed.
Fair is fair.
Thanks. I run a choice program.
Pardon?
I run a choice program in Nebraska and Wyoming.
Oh,
natural gas. So Colorado for the choice. The utilities actually tried to get it, and PUC denied the choice. So it's not the utility goes here. It's the PUC.
Well,
as I said before, it is not just the elected utilities, it's the regulators and state law. It will have to be changed. I don't remember that docket, but I'll take your word for it.
They got denied last month. But also, from my experience, the choice program in other states have drastically increased the cost, which that doesn't
go. We find a lot of evidence that doesn't support that in Texas and California in terms of lowering the cost. Now, in California, and this is why you have to do it right. In California, many of you remember Enron.
Yeah.
Okay. And that was deregulation gone bad. And we need to avoid that. Now, the problem with Enron was that we had too much generation, too much ownership of generation concentrated in one place. So one of the things we have to learn is lessons learned from other places. We want healthy competition. That means no generator, no electricity generating company can own more than 20% or 30% or 25%. You want to have competition, it's got to be competition, it's got to be fair, and it's got to be out there, and it's got to be real, meaningful choice, not halfway. And that's one of the big issues. But there are lots of examples where places where things happen in different ways. In Ohio, what happened was they put in corporate choice and individual choice, and not much change. And there weren't very many choices that were out there, and few things changed. They added community choice, and suddenly things changed drastically. And that's because when you're a spigot, you're a medium or a small company, or you're an individual, and you're looking at 30 different rate plans, it's hard to make a decision about which of those you might go through. But your community has resources that can look at this in a serious and realistic fashion. We want the lowest price renewables, lots of renewables. That's our community values. So let's allow community choice, and then corporations and individuals can opt out and say, nope, we want to stay with our incumbent monopoly, or we want to go to all coal. Okay, let's support that. And maybe we need to support that one. Let's see how that happens. Yes, sir.
If we were to approach 90%, what would be the size of the backup required? That incredibly rare day, the nationwide, there's no way getting this high.
So the question is, what is it really going to take in terms of backup on this? And the answer is, we don't actually really know. We have lots and lots of studies. And the real question is, what do we actually need? And the answer is, we really don't know that. We have models. We do modeling. Cell's done modeling. Other people have done modeling for this. ML is doing modeling all the time of what it would take. The answer is, one study says 80% renewables with no energy storage at all, just transmission, and not even a huge, huge amount of additional transmission from where we are right now. But yes, we need a national grid. Other studies say you need this much storage, and they say this or they say that. We assume that storage gets down to this price and that kind of thing. Other studies say, well, let's overbuild on the wind and overbuild on the solar, and let's do it the way Georgetown, Texas did it, and we'll develop a market. Look, it's 2 cents a kilowatt hour of electricity, okay? And you can guarantee that for a couple thousand hours a year, I'm guaranteeing you, you're going to find industries that will develop to use that electricity if they're allowed to do that, if they're allowed to get to that electricity at that kind of price. I guarantee it because the energy cost is so freaking low that it's worth taking and changing your processes. Coolers, I gather, just change from coal to natural gas, okay? Well, coolers, if it's 2 cents a kilowatt hour, they can't buy natural gas for that. Okay? Not the fuel. And so what are they going to do? If they start being able to get these 2 cent and 3 cent kilowatt hour contracts, they're going to invest in their processes. So if the wind's not blowing today, this big energy using process, we won't run it today. We'll run it tomorrow. And the wind is blowing and the sun is shining. Which of those is it going to be? I said five different things to handle viability. Variability. And the answer is, I haven't the foggiest idea. The answer is, we should do that which is cheapest that keeps the lights on reliably rock solid, better than Excel lights right now. Excel does a pretty good job.
We have time for two more questions.
Two more questions.
How do you see the status of community solar farm use right now under the conditions, current conditions with Xcel and their new rate structures that they use?
The answer is community solar gardens are continuing. Community solar garden, what's that? You take some place that's got some excess land. Maybe it's an old landfill. You can't build on it, but you certainly can put solar panels. You don't care if there's a landfill underneath the solar panels. Let's put a whole bunch of solar panels there. And then if my house is shady, but I really want to do solar, or I don't own, I rent, then I might want to get solar. Well, what do I do? Well, maybe I can strike a deal where I still pay for the grid, okay, but I own 5 solar panels out on the landfill. That's community solar gardens, shared solar, whatever it is you want to call it. The answer is it's continuing, it's moving. There is so much more capability and companies that would like to do community solar, and Xcel stops them and limits them because Xcel wants to own it all. I understand the monopoly, that's what they do. It's kind of like beating the dog for being the dog. Okay, well, we need something different than the dog. But it's still nice and easy to use sometimes, so I apologize.
Did they stop them by limiting the amount of
kilowatts
that they can generate?
That's exactly right. It's a severe limit to how much gas that can be done. And then again, in a year, they negotiated this endless amounts of effort. The people that actually install solar panels spend an awful lot of money to see to it that there is support for solar gardens, for houses, for people to install in houses, and Xcel severely limits what is available to do that. If we had no Xcel, Xcel said, all right, Rob, you can install as much solar as you want. We're not going to put any limitations except those that are absolutely critical for safety and for reliability of the grid, which is still a requirement as far as that goes. You can see far, far, far more solar in Colorado at this stage. Last question. Is there anybody else that has a question? Seeing no other questions, you get a second one.
It's kind of two-parter related. To be fair, it's not Xcel itself that's limiting it. They're convincing by their models and their negotiation with the regulators that we can do that. I mean, who's actually has the power to limit that? Is it Xcel itself that has the power to limit that, or is it that they convince the regulators that, hey, for us to maintain our profitability and everything else, we need to limit it?
Let me give you an example. So it's what's called regulatory capture. Okay, Xcel insists that the PUC is all events from the macro, and it's total nonsense. It's total talk in Xcel. I'll give you a specific example. So Xcel is putting in a 600 megawatt wind farm, and they're going to own it. Okay. When they go to the PUC, they're supposed to ask permission before spending $1 billion of not their money, our money. Because remember, when Xcel installs something, we pay for it, and we pay a guaranteed profit, even if it doesn't work. Like Comanche 3, which is being rapidly going to be unusable because of variable renewables. Okay? We're going to pay for profit on that for the next 25, 30, 40 years, because that's the rules, that's the way those are set up. Okay, so Xcel is supposed to get permission, and then they're supposed to go do the contracts. No, Xcel went out for the wind farm, and they got the contracts first. And then they went to the PUC. Oh, yeah, they made sure the contracts were available, were able to be broken in some fashion, that kind of stuff. They had the contracts in hand, and then went to the PUC. We're going to pay Xcel 2.7 cents a kilowatt hour. Now, if we can build for wind farm built in 2016. Now, if the national average is 2 cents a kilowatt hour, and we're spending 2.7 cents, do you think that's a good deal for the people of Colorado or a bad deal? I'd say that's about a $30 million a year bad deal for the people of Colorado, because we could have had 2 cents. We should have had 2 cents. If it was a competitive general operation market, we would have had 2 cents. Okay? Legislatively, they have more money than anybody, so they have more lobbyists than anybody in the legislature.
That's my second question. Isn't it an inherent conflict of interest for a monopoly to allow a monopoly to lobby the legislature for their own benefit?
I got to ask you another question. Should Xcel be able to spend millions of dollars on political things when they're a monopoly? And the answer, I think, is no, but that's what they do.
Okay.
you know, in terms of influencing elections in Boulder and that sort of stuff. Millions and millions of dollars. Amendment 37. All the rules that you see came from Amendment 37. Legislation passed by the people of Colorado in a ballot issue in 2004. Okay? All the solar that you see, all the wind you see came from that. Oh yeah, it was increased even with Excel support from 10% to 20% and now to 30%. Renewables, but it all came from the people of Colorado. Excel spent $2 million or so to fight that back in 2004 in terms of doing that. Should they be able to do that? I don't think so. I think it's wrong. If a monopoly is doing it, we don't let our government spend money. How's it different for Excel? I don't know. The answer is they are out there setting the rules, so they get a friendly administration or they get a friendly public utilities commission to them, and they get the rules changed to support what they want to do.
But I think you just brought up the key there is that isn't the PUC there to make sure that they give an appropriate profit, but not too much. And apparently the PUC is in their pocket to give them all this money that then they can go do all these other things with. So to me, shouldn't we be turning our ire to the PUC and not Excel?
Certainly talking to the legislature, because that's where laws are changed, is where I would go to. The Public Utilities Commission is based on a set of rules. The fact that Excel has been there for the last 80 years, changing the rules to benefit themselves, is not really here or there. It's the legislature that has allowed that, in terms of doing
yes.
things on
the legislature changes the rules.
But the legislature sets the overall rules, and Excel lobbies, but we can lobby too. And the people of Colorado speak loudly enough, our legislators will listen, no matter how much Excel spends. I do want to say a couple things, though, just to add one more thought.
Okay.
There is no evidence that I've ever had that any commissioner is in Excel's pocket directly.
Sure.
I don't believe that they're taking bribes. I don't believe Excel is offering bribes to them. Okay. There are other states where that is not true. And as near as I can tell, this is, in fact, the case in Colorado. It's that the rules have been set over time. You get a friendly commission, they set the rules a particular way, the rest of the commissions have to follow those rules. That's how change happens.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for coming. The coffee shop is trying to close by 8, so if you have some visiting to do or you want to check in with him, please do it expediently. And if you're able to take any dishes for the bins over here, that's also appreciated. And I hope to see you next month.
Thank you.
Thank you.